Hello, I'm Neil Allen from Hudson, New York. You're listening to WGXE Acra 90.7 FM.
Did you know that Wave Farm's WGXE 90.7 FM has its own app? The Wave Farm radio app, available for both iOS and Android, allows users to listen to live audio from any of the Wave Farm web streams, including WGXE 90.7 FM, Standing Wave Radio, the installations in the Wave Farm Art Park, and other partner streams. And you can also find us on the Bloomberg Connects app, where you can explore the Wave Farm Art Park installations and the Pomotsitok Wak Kulistok, an indigenous sound walk. Plan your visit and learn more about what Wave Farm has to offer at wavefarm.org.
Columbia County Sanctuary Movement is a nonprofit organization based in Columbia County that organizes alongside immigrants and allies to collectively support, empower, and defend our communities. CCSM offers programs that assist newly arrived individuals, including food programs, mutual aid funds, legal support services, and opportunities to organize and be an activist. You can find more information on social media at CCSMNY or by calling 518-303-3848.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Melissa Dubin of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Ever since songwriters started writing songs, they have written songs about a rose.
About a rose.
Red roses, blue roses, old roses, new roses. Roses from the south and east and west. But here's the rose song that I love the best.
The best.
Show me a rose, I'll show you a girl who cares. Show me a rose, or leave me alone. Show me a rose, I'll show you a stag at bay. Show me a rose, or leave me alone. She taught me how to do the tango, down where the palm trees sway. I called her Rosa Mia, and she called a spade a spade. Show me a rose, I'll show you a storm at sea. Show me a rose, or leave me alone. One night in Bixby, Mississippi, we watched the clouds roll by. I said, my dear, how are you? And she whispered, so am I. Show me a rose, I'll show you a girl named Sam. Show me a rose, or leave me alone.
Show me a rose,
a fragrant rose. Make believe that you don't know me until you show me a rose.
A fragrant rose.
We'll be right back. want to welcome everybody back to the Radio Museum. This is Gregory Forte here at WGXC. And what I get to do first Thursday of every month is I get to play you some voices from radio's past, some familiar storytellers. Tonight, we are going to hear a story called The Christmas Skater, Atoms in Motion. Sort of a Christmas tradition for myself. I like to drive and look at the lights and listen to this one. It's a great story. Runs about 45 minutes. So after one tune, we are going to hear the story of The Christmas Skater. So welcome back, everybody. Again, thanks for listening to WGXC 90.7 FM.
Like I own the whole park. Welcome to my wonderland. I said, welcome to our wonderland. You're listening to Atoms, Motion, and the Void. There's a little creek, or stream, that pours down the hill behind my cabin, and eventually gathers up into a river or brook, and every winter it freezes. I live on top of Market Mountain, not too high, but high enough, and in the winter, at Christmas, I like to take a walk down the mountain in the snowy woods along the narrow, down-going cascades of the frozen stream. Until finally there is some leveling out, and the creek, or stream, is no longer rope-like and sculpted over the rocks and frozen in its movement, but smooths out in a blanket of ice and waits, I like to think, for my skates, which I have brought along with me, slung around my neck for such a skating purpose. If I were a much younger man, or a good skating boy with Roughhauser friends, I'm sure we'd be having a dare much earlier on the very steep, sloping parts of the river, and we would fall and crash along the snowbanks and be battered by the tumbling, but still happy for the excitement and the thrill of the sport. Before actually setting out on the skates, I will sit on the river edge and stomp my feet on the grey, gravestone ice, and spend a few moments stamping and stomping, for despite everything, being old, alone, a little infirm, I am still excessively safe, and despite a month of sub-zero mountain weather, I will test the tiniest river to make sure the ice has proofed, to make sure my boots don't get damp. And then, after a test or two, I might simply go out upon the surface of the river in my old leathers and just glide around, glimmering, childlike, checking the cold friction, the slickeriness of the surface, which isn't an excessively safe thing to do, especially when one is old. But I should also claim right here that no matter how safe I am in some places, I am equally reckless in others. Whatever combination of cold and warmth and precipitation, there is some magic mixture that will create the right ice, a good ice, a smooth, hard, but still spongy surface. Not necessarily glassy, but something that allows for perfect gliding while yet permitting the skate blades to sink and take their necessary bite. The shiny and beautiful glass-like ice of postcards is sometimes a little too hard and will prevent the blades from notching their groove, and one will find such ice more like an oiled floor. During my testing phase, I will also keep an eye open for any kind of secret and enticing ice pockets. Usually along the edges of the water, you will find some of these sugary patches, where the water had once risen and then fallen away, leaving in its absence these wafer sheets of ice which hang delicate ceilings over little cabins of air. Ever since I was a boy, I've been a keen smasher of ice and have considered it something of a duty or job or responsibility to shatter as many of these ice panes as I can find. In puddles, in bird baths, in rivers or lakes. It's a strangely messy and hoodlum business that rather distresses me after the fact for the amount of shardy mess that is created. Perhaps it's because I never married or had children. I have maintained some of my old boyhood ways. I should say, too, if I haven't yet, that I only skate once a year, on Christmas Day. It is the way in which I go about my Christmas now, out into the woods and thence along the river until it breaks on the flat. After the ice evaluation ritual, I strap on my old brown Bauer skates. Not too tight, as I won't be racing, and every year it is the same. The first ungainly moments of trembling up onto the skates as a foal upon its fresh legs. An awful and uncomfortable and slightly terrifying transition from the world of being in charge to the world of letting loose. From the Morse code of 1 foot stabbing deftly, reasonably, after another, to the song of movement that is skating. But this is such a fragmentary moment of estrangement, of not understanding, of not feeling right, that it passes into amnesia, and a moment later one is zipping along as though one has lived a fine long life, with skates instead of feet. The river stays deep in the woods, and for many miles wanders along this dip in the valley, before it empties into the larger highway of the Pemigewasset, and thereafter, I suppose, to the sea. Everything, to me, follows this expression of thereaftering into the sea. I feel that all things are slowly slipping that way, myself included, down into the dirt, perhaps, but in a million years' course, slowly filtering toward the sea. It is mostly through the shadowy trees and low-hanging heavy branches that I go along, with the pleasant, soundless pillow of a snowy bunker on either side. Through statue fields of birch and the dead posts of cat-o'-nine-tails, and then suddenly coming wide upon a sprawling meadow, where once upon a time there must have been a farm. I stay strictly within a range of a couple miles, and just skate along the stream without a single sign of another person or mark of life, and for the duration of my skate I am hidden in the wilderness, just moving along like a strange locomotive in the ultra-still and frosty fairy land of the burdened woods. And in places, because of the age of the river and the height of the river banks, it would look, from a distance, as though just my head were sailing along over the snow. The river is that cut down into the earth, that low, and the banks so high. Everything is silent and snow quiet, except the skates, as they work their spitting hard breaths from the ice. This skating tradition began long ago. I was 46 and living in Ottawa, and out in front of my rooming house, in honour of the town-wide winter carnival, a little ice rink was yearly established from the merging ingredients of a garden hose and water, and a few old boards nailed together in a rough box shape. There were snacks served from a rickety concession booth, and a piano stood beside this, under a tarp tented up on stilts. There was also an old blackened barrel, full of hot coals burning red, and behind the concessionary was a steaming hot grill, topped with sausages and hamburgers. The woman who ran the rink would sell cocoa and hot dogs and such things and roasted peanuts, and there were coloured lights on streamers and banners, and at 7 or so every night, an older man would walk up to the blackened brazier, warm his hands in the orange glow, and then sit down beneath the tarp at the old, crumpled-looking piano, which leaned oddly across the snow as though it had been dropped there from a building roof, and we would play, Mr. Brickett's and I, some kind of song that neither of us knew, and if he or I had been drinking, one of us would mumble out some lyrics.
Christmas ain't a holiday, a decorated tree. It ain't a bough of branches or a special on TV. It's a standing for another word. You know this secretly. I won't come out and say the word, that's your discovery. but it rhymes with glow, and you wear it on the hand of mystery. Pirates and sailors and those lost at sea, cowboys and Indians, drunkards the free, know what I mean, and so I Christmas thee. Doctors and dentists, those lost in a dream, fishermen, ferrymen crossing the stream, know what I mean, and so I Christmas thee. Know what I mean, and so I Christmas thee. At first I had gone out simply to watch the children do their gambling circles, their bad impressions of good skating, arms and swan-like flutters, faces beaming with championship smiles into the dream of whatever international pavilion. But then soon I was coming out to sit on one of the two benches near the brazier. I had gotten to know the old piano player, Mr. Bricketts, and because I was a little musical, and because the piano needed it, I regularly began to tweak the workings with a wrench and tune it by ear. I also became familiar with the woman who ran the rink. She was also the landlord of my rooming house, as had been her father before her, and it had been him, apparently, who had started this tradition of the snack rink, as it was called. There was a hot and sweet and meat pepper steam and pungent smoke that rolled solicitously down the Hanover streets to draw the winter carnival seekers along, like cartoon characters floating in on the deliciousness of our tangy treasure. Miss Patton also sold a special adult drink, fortified and bewitched and bitter as pine sap, which was conveyed to her by one of the mountain-dwelling folks, brought to town in a huge cauldron on the back of a horse-drawn cart. And she would dole this out in secret cups to the neighbours and friends who knew she had it. And I would often purchase a cup or two and sit with Mr. Bricketts and eat a hot dog or fish the hot peanuts out of their oily bag and watch the children skate. Soon Miss Patton was joining us when there was no line at her concession, and we had made a kind of winter carnival team of observers, and our conversation revolved around the skating children. "Look at this one here racing by," I would say. "Look at the girl there in the middle," Miss Patton might add. There was almost always a very fast boy speeding around the edges of the rink, trying to impress the girls, and there was always a girl in the centre, spinning like a top, and I'm sure it was Miss Patton who pointed out how this was quite like an atomic particle. At the time, Mr. Bricketts and I had no idea about atomic particles, but Miss Patton was something of an interested party, and had spent some time in science school, or had worked in a laboratory, and even mentioned once that she had written a paper, but she said that the universe was made of atomic particles, that they were the building blocks of everything, and at the center of every atom was a nucleus, a bit like a tiny, tiny sun, and racing around the edge of the atom, and actually being the edge of the atom, was a super-fast particle called a neutron, and what we were seeing on the ice here before us was like a strange human superstructure replication of this microscopic world. The girl revolving in the nuclear center like the sun, and the neutron boy racing around the peripheries, creating the edge. At which science-like moments, Mr. Bricketts and I would exchange a comical, wide-eyed glance, as though we were both, neither of us, quite smart enough to still be alive, and we would sip from our cups of mountain preservative, as though to show that this was more the sort of life we were capable of leading. Yet still, while incredulous, we were also both full of admiration for Miss Patton,
as though her knowledge would serve as some protection or safety, if ever dark days came. For knowing this and being so odd as to have a snack rink, a rooming house, her own special brand of liquor, and such puzzling affinity with the sciences, all then together with the poetry of her own view of the world, and her ease communicating these bizarre things to us, we too, who barely knew where our clothing was kept and what year it was, well, it seemed brave, or quite intimate, I suppose, is what I'm saying, and we both found it touching that she would share these insights with us, knowing as she did that we were both mostly just lost souls, stranded wherever we were, Mr. Bricketts and I, and none too smart about anything, even the things we knew. And then usually, after such a pronouncement, Mr. Bricketts would stand and wander over to the brazier to heat his hands, before sitting down at the piano to play some suitable skating music, and I might rise and join him, or I might stay on the bench, if Miss Patten stayed. And at such times, when Miss Patten and I would sit together, either she or I would sort of lift a little and push closer to the other on the bench, so that our coats would press together. But really, the point was to make our communication clearer, because of the noise of the children and the piano, and in part, perhaps, because there was some little degree of seeming warmth added by the proximity. We were both of the age where any kind of younger passions did not present. To be seated so close was simply practical for us two older people, and there was nothing more in it. I suppose she was a year or three older, maybe 50 to my 47, and I remember once hearing another resident of the house say that she had been married very young, and her husband had died quite quickly, which was the language of the resident, and I continue to remember this phrase and find myself holding on to it at the odd time, that Miss Patten's husband died quite quickly. Wondering about it, that perhaps it meant that he died shortly after their marriage, or had died unexpectedly, but to the relief of all, the death had been painless. And also once I went to the local library to see if I could find some hint of the scientific paper she had written. "I believe it may be about atomic particles," I suggested to the librarian. "Her last name is Patten, but perhaps she was married at the time, and Patten may be her maiden name. She lives in Canada. Are there so many scientific papers from women in Canada, I wonder? And of course I should have said that her husband died quite quickly, and so it is, probably, after all, Patten. So I am looking for a paper by a woman named Patten, Alice Patten, on skating, perhaps, or atomic particles, as I said."
"I sing with the birds, so the sky stays away. I sleep in the tree with the fish in the lake. So I guess I'll go lay down in the clouds. My sister's gone to lay out in the fields. We always lay down in the ground, looking for the lost and found that we lost and found. I sat down near, the dawn never tires. I shut down the stove, but these folks won't retire. So we all go lay out on the ground, looking for the lost and found. And we lost and found. I don't have a penny, but I don't know a man. I ain't got no food, but I was born insane. So I guess I'll go lay down in the clouds. Oh, my sister's gone to lay out in the fields. We always lay down on the ground, looking for the lost and found. Love lost and found.
And I bring this all up, my old long ago history in Ottawa, and the snack park, and Mr. Brickett's and Miss Patton, because there was one particular moment, or evening, I suppose, that I most often continue to recall. My imagination claims it was the evening of Christmas Day, and I like to think of it that way. But it's obviously tempting to fudge such dates when the memory is for oneself alone. It may have just been somewhere along in the middle of winter. A snow was falling, and there was a great sense of beauty. Steam was billowing from the oven grate, and dark smoke rising up from the black barrel, and a rosy, heart orange glow poking from its mouth, and the night was coming on with blackness in the mountains, but it was not yet dark. A row of candles beamed in the front windows of the rooming house, and along the streets there was a great old-fashioned merriness, with the gas lanterns just coming on. And it must have been a weekend night, for there were revellers and carollers and many children rushing about. Miss Patton and I were sitting quite close on the bench, and Mr. Brickett's was at the piano, and there was a scattering of skaters who all at once left the ice and went to the sides for apple cider, and this left two children, a very young boy and girl of 3 or 4, both sputtering around the ice with apple cheeks and running noses, with their gloves pinned to their sleeves, both trying to convert the idea of skating into some kind of acceptable version of walking. But aside from their unsteadiness, these two were vastly interested in each other, and in some comical way were attempting to make passage to one another, with the goal that they might meet up. "The boy is Sam, and the girl is Julia," Miss Patton said. "He lives in the white apartment near the bakery, and she lives in the blue building near the sewing shop." And to our amusement, Julia stopped her roving, and was now softly spinning in the centre of the ice, watching as Sam veered desperately around her edges. "He's going round her like the bigger boys," I noted. And Miss Patton made a comment about Julia being in the centre, and Sam suddenly leapt upward on his skates and corrected his pathway. And the two children went into a slow collision together, out on the ice, and took each other's hands to stop from falling. And Miss Patton moved closer to me, so that our shoulders came upon the other, as we shared this moment of witnessing as the two children, rosy-cheeked and sparkle-eyed, one from the white apartment near the bakery, one from the blue building near the sewing shop, closed their company, leaned forward together, and slowly rolled their lips toward the tiniest and sweetest small kiss, before then both crashing to the ice. It was another few moments before Miss Patton and I breathed, both of us so purely focused on the beautiful spectacle of the children's first kiss, that we had come, both of us, into an extraordinary stillness. And then a few seconds later Miss Patton noted the small line that had formed at her concession, and she stood, and almost not facing me, as into the wind and quietly into the falling snow, she said, "We should skate later, and her hand pointed out toward the ice, and she appeared to be saying just a few additional things before she went over to the brazier and the steaming oven and began to dispense whatever food. And I'm not sure, but I believed at the time that she'd said, "You and I," and slowly, in my mind, as I recreated her departure and the manner of her gesture and the movement of her averted lips, I finally believed what she really said was, "We should skate later, you and I, just like that, like Sam and Julia." And I sat with that in my chest for a while and watched her for signs of any escaping emotion as she served her customers at the stand. But the notion then arranged in my mind, based on nothing really, that some midnight rendezvous had been established. I went inside to neaten up, to shower and get dressed into whatever nicer clothing I had. And then later I brought my skates out into the midnight darkness and sat on the bench lacing them, waiting for Miss Patton, that we might go out onto the ice and try for ourselves the fancy figure of an atomic particle. But either my mysterious sense of our impending togetherness was some dream of my own fashioning, or whether Miss Patton had come out earlier, I don't know. I did go out, however, and as though to let her know, if she was watching inside, that if she wished to be the girl, the nucleus, spinning slowly in the center, that I would happily, and for her alone, establish a most excellent and sturdy edge. And I went fast around the rink in the darkness until a sweat came, and I felt a sudden strangeness and nausea, because knowing there was nothing I could do, no way to compel anything in the world into the figure of my want, and I slowed with a wave of fatigue and went, finally, inside to sleep.
Lay down my armor and send me to sleep like a boat on the harbor and a horse cows and sea. There's a boy in the mountain laying down in the stars, and the one with my heart lost a heart to the war. As I skate down the river now, it is toward a makeshift destination
that I think of as the snack park. It would seem outrageous to me if there was not a more prosaic explanation for the notion of the coincidence, but that there is, in a birchy stretch of the river, a collapsed old trailer home hidden under a pile of pine boughs, and inside this old house is a cheap, strongman piano, largely shattered by time. A good half of the keys are dead, and the string bed is a mire of rust and leaves and sticks. Each year I return and find it much, much worse than the previous. But there are a few good keys, and I bring along a wrench and will tune whatever of the unrusted strings that I can. Miss Patton, I am fairly sure, unless she has died, continues to live at and run the Hargrove boarding house. Over the course of the years I have stopped in to see her several times, and she once visited me here in Lemon, but only for a moment, and in town, as she was passing through. We talk about the snack park, and happily wander after Mr. Prickett's, and one of us, inevitably, will bring up Sam and Julia, and whether they ever married, and whether they remember their first kiss. And I have made it a custom, in my holiday note to her, to invite Miss Patton to come and join me here in this anonymous place in the woods, at my snack park, as I write. Dear Miss Patton, from the main street you bear off along the dirt road, with the sign that points to Market Mountain, which is where I live now, in a cabin by myself, and I am doing very well. But a mile along this road, on the right, you will see a little place to pull off. Park here, and then head toward the large oak, and you will soon find a trail in the snow, which I have myself inscribed, which leads about a quarter mile to my version of the snack park. You'll go up and over the hill, and it's a gentle climb, and then it descends, and it is safe, and you will not fall. Unfortunately, the snacks are cold, and Mr. Brickett's is nowhere to be found. But there is, unbelievably, a piano, and there is a patch of ice, and we could still, I'm sure, skate a bit, somewhat, in the pooling circle of the river. That is, of course, if you bring skates and have the inclination. But obviously, this is partly just a dream, and in my retirement I am happy to go out to the snack park in the positive strength of my own being, for that is enough. As I said, I am doing quite well. And just so you know, stamping out the footpath that leads from the old oak tree and over the hill was not done simply to ease your possible foot travel, but is just what exists, as I like to walk sometimes into town to the bakery there for coffee after skating and a roll. And thus I wish you my best wishes for the new year, and hope to see you soon, one of these years, either here or there, but certainly soon and somewhere. My warm regards, Sir Winsleeves. So that is the kind of spirit with which I take myself on Christmas Day into the woods. And I am skating along now, pumping hard my old legs, and then stopping and standing in the air and gasping with my life, and gliding through the woods, sometimes ducking beneath the snowy branches, and often knocking the fluffy, powdery piles down onto my shoulders and neck, and then sometimes even falling when a thorn or brambling concern reaches out and seizes one of my legs and rips me to a side. And something about being pitched over by a bush always makes me laugh. Of course, there is no way that I imagine Miss Patton coming along on Christmas Day, of all days, to park in the little pull-off on the slightly dangerous dirt road, and to be searching for the big oak tree, to then go tromping along through the woods on a path I made, or to bring her skates. For if she did, it would mean that I had, actually, rightly understood her long ago, and that her offer had stood as I believed it to stand, and that, through whatever unacceptability of communication and shyness and whatever difficulty people have, that she had meant that we go out onto the ice together, for the figure of the atomic particle. And while in my heart I hold that like a token, I do not, in the narrow iron regularity of the world, and its practical and all too solid parts, believe that she did. Which is why, as I enter my snack park, under a cool white sky that looks to be sneaking snow into its forward bow to surprise me with some sudden attack, I am not shocked to find that there is no one here. No one spinning softly in the center of the river, where it widens out and pools. And I am not surprised that there is no sign of her smaller steps on the trail that comes down the lowland hill and settles to the river bank. I take myself to the edge and sit in the thick powder snow and unlace the skates and pull down my boots from my shoulders, and I go walking up toward the old trailer. Always a slight glance around to see just how the trailer might have gotten here, and always thinking that it came floating down the river, for there is no bridge or other nearby civilization that would get the trailer here. Or perhaps it fell, like Mr. Brickett's old piano, but then I am always imagining things falling from the sky. I don't know why this is, but it is always an unspoken possibility for me that things have fallen. Pushing in the door of the old trailer home and sitting in the derelict darkness with my cold sandwich and then a drink of gin, which is the closest thing to the old mountain drink that Miss Patton served, and then tuning and then playing the piano, the old song of Christmas.
I was feeling pretty good for la 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 la, taking my time on the la 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 la. Snow falling down in the la 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 la. Everybody singing like la 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 la. Decking all the halls with the la 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 la. Making my way to the la 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 la.
Playing the song, looking through the blown open sides of the trailer to the path in the snow, just in case. Finishing the song and turning back again into the darkness of the trailer. Looking at the place, at the ruin of it. Still scraps of old life here and there. Cardboard cereal boxes flat on the floor. an old frozen shirt, crumpled and stump-like under the table. Rising up, to then head back out to the ice, to do my circles, my fast peripheral loops and lappings, closing my eyes on the straightaway, pretending that you're there. And appearing at the doorway, looking downward at my shoes for a last moment of ignorant hope, as though before my final, deep and wide appraisal of the scene, I will give myself this one last pass of possibility. And then, at the door, I am destroyed in one instant and rebuilt in the next, as looking up from the door of the trailer from my boots, whereupon scanning out and squinting to the hill, and seeing that which I have always wanted to see there on the hill, a figure of someone coming down, and I am running hard toward my skates, an old man running toward his skates left in the deep snow by the river, as a green and pink jacket slowly comes down the path I made, white skates swinging over her shoulders. And my dream is that I will already be there, which accounts for my haste, going in circles before she quite arrives at the riverside, because I cannot say the words. I can only create the wide and circular and always disappearing space of my feeling, and hope that she is here to follow the deepest impressions of the universe and agrees to hold the center, my center, her center, me of the white apartment, her of the blue building.
Gentlemen, once again for listening to the Radio Museum. This is Gregory. I'd really love to get a Joe Frank. Look up Joe Frank. What was the name of his show? Somewhere Out There. Do what you needed to do.